right, folks, we are back on the Flanks.com Teton podcast. Stephen Jadarf here with my usual co-host, Scott, the one and only McLeod. How are you?
I'm doing great, bud. How are you?
I'm all right. Busy week. You know, went to that Leafs game in Ottawa, 16,000 people. Really cool to be around.
Weird.
It was a little bit weird, but not like, I don't know. Once you're in the seats, it felt pretty normal. Right. And then walking around, like everyone's just wearing masks in the concourse and stuff. So it all felt fine. I mean, and it was very normal that the Leafs lost Ottawa, who's like, that team was just absolute garbage. And like they had some, like I kept yelling, like enjoy Belleville in a few months to their goalie.
No.
That was like standing on his head, because he's not even an NHL goalie. He's probably going to play in Belleville. Like, it's beautiful this time of year. Enjoy it. And then, of course, he turns into Martin Brodeur that week, that one night I'm there. At least lose 3-2 and whatever. But, hey,
no pitchers on the scorecard, my friend.
Yeah. Well, it was great to be. It was just great to be there. But, yeah, I haven't played any golf. I haven't touched my clubs. I don't even have clubs right now. I mentioned that last time. I think I have a – I have a 5-iron, and then you pulled a dummy though.
You basically passed off your set to a friend. Don't have a backup set. Like, you always got to have a backup set.
I don't think I wanted a backup set. I think I was just so upset with golf that I'm gonna give myself a birdie this week. I haven't hit any balls, so I can't have any bogeys, so it's a birdie. I'm 1 under. But I might go to the range this week. I don't know. I feel like I'm going to regret it in a couple weeks. And I sound like what I said not to be doing on this pod, like,
yeah,
last week, like, I don't like golf anymore. I don't play, whatever. Yeah. But like, I know in a month I'm going to be begging you to come hit the cave here. So, yeah, that's what's new with me. What's new with you?
get it in while you can. Not a lot of golf. Played, one little scramble on the weekend, finished middle of the pack. Couldn't make any putts, but it's nice to get out for scramble season. Got one more coming up this weekend. And yeah, that'll probably be it for outdoor golf. I don't really see myself playing a lot of rounds heading into November.
We're both playing this weekend, so maybe we'll have some updates next week. Maybe we'll try to get one more round in together.
Yeah.
I don't know. We'll see. Probably not. Probably just play at the
indoor
St. Golf. Andrews or something on the sim sometime next week.
Yeah.
Why don't we get in the week that was? Given our stories, our birdies, our pars, our bogeys, and our honorable mentions. So why don't you start it off with your birdie for the week?
Yeah, my birdie, I was actually just spotted this story today, but a lot of people will be familiar with Jeff Ogilvie, who won the 2006 Australian Open. And you know what? After his playing career, he's been pretty proactive in the golf community in Australia. And, you know, he's been very vocal as well about the formats of golf events. And they've been fortunate in Australia to start having a few more mixed events, the Victorian Open, for an example. But he and Mike Clayton, another former player who is in course design now as well, they're behind a new event called the Sandbelt Invitational. And you know what? It basically is doing exactly what they want it to be doing as far as golf events in Australia. They've got a couple of their big events in Australia that are canceled this winter due to COVID. But they're starting this new event that is basically going to feature 4 of the top Australian links courses. And they're going to include men, women, amateurs, and pros all in this event, all playing. I haven't seen too many detail yet, so I don't know all the formats, but you know, one of the things he said was, you know, golf has always been too segregated. We need to get all the golfers back into the same pile. So that's kind of a neat statement for him. And you know, they want to have a lot of social kind of aspects to the tournament, all just bringing in a lot of different people, a lot of you know, different perspectives of the game all mixed in. They're hoping for some television in the future, and I just think it's a good initiative by him. And you know, you don't see all the players kind of do this. Not that it's their responsibility. I mean, they go out and play and they have their career and so forth, but he feels obligated to give back to the game. So it's neat to see him get behind this event.
Yeah, I don't know anybody that's had a bad thing to say about Jeff. And this is just another way. Like, his game flew off the planet.
Yeah.
Right. And he could have easily done what a lot of players do. Been embarrassed by how bad he played at the end of his career and went into hiding. And you could have never seen Jeff. He has enough money to never hear. He could have changed his name, be Jeff Smith living in Melbourne somewhere.
Yeah.
Right. And here he is putting his face out there, doing what he thinks is right. Yeah, that could be an eagle even. I love that birdie for the week. I think it's a good story. I think this is a great story too. My birdie of the week goes to Rachel Rowana. I don't know if you know who Rachel is, but she just finished 10th on the Symetra Tour, meaning she's heading to the LPGA Tour. Right? You're like, oh, cool. She finished 10th. There's nine other people. You're going to give them all birdies too? No, I'm not, because in the final tournament of the year for Rachel, she found a 15th club in her golf bag. Now, that golf club did not belong to her. It actually belonged to her 3-year-old daughter. It's a little 23-inch golf club that somehow ended up in her golf bag. And it turns out that her 3-year-old has been traveling with her all season on the Symetra Tour. We've talked about how difficult the Symetra Tour is, how there's not a lot of money out there. You know, you're not making money on the Symetra Tour. You're just trying to survive to get to that next tour. Now imagine doing that with a 3-year-old. And then in your final tournament, when you really, really need to play well so you can lock up your card, you incur a 4-stroke penalty for a club that you're clearly never going to use in the round. Oh, that it couldn't even be mistaken. That cost her $900. Didn't actually cost her the graduation of the LPGA Tour, which I love.
Thankfully.
And the cool part of that story is she's 30 years old, and she becomes the first mother to earn her professional card by going through the Symetra Tour. So just an awesome story overall. A good laugh at the end of it, obviously. Could have ended up with not as much of a laugh, but that's a grinder. I don't care about these guys playing on the Hooters tour and all that, making money. You make more money out there than you do on these tours. Those guys aren't carrying around a 3-year-old with them. That's a birdie. Could be an eagle. Could be a hole in one. Just hilarious story that ends with a happy ending.
I love it. And and that's always a big thing that at the end of the year, seeing those 10 players move up to the LPGA Tour. Should mention Canadian mod Emmy LeBlanc is involved with that as well. She is part of that. She was definitely the tallest player in the photos of the 10 that are graduating to the tour. She's somebody who retired. We talked about it on this podcast. She retired.
Talk about it last week, Scott.
I know. And the thing is that, she's in that mix there as well. So, Rachel Rahana, great story, cool stuff. And, wish her all the best next year.
Love it. What's your par for the week?
Par for the week for me, Ricky Fowler. I mean,
you give him a par. I give him a bogey for the week. Let's talk about Ricky.
Yeah. You know what? I gave him a par because here's the thing. He's playing well. Great to see. He got a special exemption to play in the CJ Cup. Nice. T3 had the 54 hole lead. Unfortunately, had a few bobbles in there, and obviously Rory excelled in there. What I kind of wonder though is that, people wonder, okay, Ricky Fowler's got 5 PGA Tour wins. Is he on his way up or is he on his way down? Obviously, his game has been terrible, so it's been on the way down, but is this a sign that he's going to be revived? And is it really necessary to have him around? He's a great guy, but he's 32 now. It's not like he's 25. So does Ricky Fowler still push the needle in the game? I can't really decide if he does or if he doesn't.
I mean, pushing the needle, I think PGA Tour Live tells you he does because he's on it every single week. The reason why I give it a bogey is that this guy's got a kid coming soon too.
True.
And yeah, there are the, playing for perspective and the perspective cup that they keep talking about, different perspective this week.
Yeah.
Perspective goes away real quick when you get 4 hours of sleep the night before a tournament. I'm talking
or
to
a podcast.
A guy, or a podcast. Talking to a guy who's grinding right now in 4 hours of sleep. And I didn't have to get up 3 times in the middle of the night. Shout out to mothers. Yeah. But I'm giving it a bogey because it's like, this might be one he's going to wish didn't get away from him. What I mean? It's just like, I had it there. I got it, get it in my grasp. Ricky could come back and win this week and we'd be like, sweet. And then he could go on and win 2 more times this year. And a lot of people, they'd be like, oh, Ricky, like he disappeared for a while, but this is Ricky Fowler. He's always at the top of the leaderboards. That's the guy that finished second in every major 1 year. Right. So I don't know. I think it's just one that got away from him. I think a par is fair. I didn't have another bogey this week, so I gave one to my boy Ricky.
Yeah, you know what? I think you're right about that regret. I mean, it could have been a very different story had he won this week, and it set up a lot of things going forward. But, we'll see what happens over in Japan where he's playing as well. But curious to kind of see where he is as far as crossroads in his game at the age of 32. So
also using that Cobra 3D printed putter too, mm-hmm. which is pretty rare. I don't think anyone else on the PGA Tour is using one. you know, going from that Scotty, that trusty Scotty that he used forever. Like, I don't think putting was ever his problem. And no. I'm not, it's probably set up so perfectly the exact same. It's a 3D printer. They probably can make it better than Scotty can make a Scotty Cameron putter these days, right? Like, he can just print it to the specs for all we know. But at the end of the day, yeah. So just a little, I mean, I'm not giving a score for the record, the Cobra putter. Yeah. I've never seen it. I'm not going to tell you what I think about it, but I just thought it was an interesting tidbit of information.
All right. So what's your par for the week?
My par is just the CJ Cup. I tried to watch it Sunday and it wasn't on. And we had the Champions Tour playoff on. Lee Jansen just makes his bomb to pick up a win over Miguel Angel Jimenez, who you know what? He's my bogey for the week, actually. Did you see that? I saw on Twitter this nonsense of him arguing with Alex Chayka about a drop. Like, this guy cannot just stay out of something. Get your ponytail out of there. The rules official's right there. Tell him where to take the drop. And here comes Mr. Stretches to tell him what, no, it should be over here. You know, like, go drink your wine over there, ponytail. And like, let me finish up here. So I was glad he didn't win. I actually like Miguel, like, he's a character, but like, yeah. After that, I'm glad the gods came out. But my par is a CJ Cup. So couldn't even get it on TV. When I did get on TV, it's the back nine on Sunday. The back nine. What is this? The Masters in 1990? Like, what? Like, it's the CJ Cup.
Las Vegas Masters.
Yeah, it was odd.
At the summit.
And then you're watching it and you're looking at this leaderboard, and this should have had you fired up. You have Sungjae Im in there, right? You got Ricky, you got Rory, you got other players that I forget because I didn't watch a lot of it, but you have quite the leaderboard up there. Yeah. And it felt dull. It felt there was no energy in there. There was no energy from the broadcast. It felt like a secondary broadcast on a Thursday before, like, afternoon. Like, it did not feel like a Sunday with arguably one of the best players of our generation coming down for his 20th win of the season. So it's just like a myth for me overall. Maybe it's 2 weeks in Vegas. Everyone was just destroyed at that point. Nobody cared.
Know.
But yeah, just a myth. It's just a par. Like, cool. Like, it should have been better. I'm not giving it a bogey because, like, it had the makings of greatness. And it just, and maybe that's back to our question we got last week from Brad Fritch. Like, when have you hit your saturation level? I think Brad hit it. Like, maybe we need a break or something, Scotty. Like, I wonder if it's just like hit it. Like, it's like the stories we're trying to dig out here right now to make something interesting. Like, when you and I came and watched the golf and Rory's on the mix, like,
yeah,
maybe there's a problem.
Yeah, you're right. Definitely. I mean, I saw enough BBGO commercials that, you know, I'm into explosive Korean flavors in my, you know, whatever. that was enough. And I was kind of tired of it that way. Obviously, it was great to see Rory win, but you're right. I mean, it didn't have a lot of excitement. It almost felt like a skins game or something. You know what I mean? With the desert, and it was just like, it was sort
that
of
would have been more entertaining.
Probably. It just felt like an exhibition event, and you know, the scoring was super low, which, you know, doesn't always bother me or whatever, but yeah, you're right, it didn't have a lot of elements for an event that's supposed to be an elevated event on the tour.
Well, and it used to be when it was in Asia, right? It was a huge tournament, and I think they want to get back there considering the market the CJ Cup is in, but yeah, it wasn't right now. Let's say that. Let's hit our honorable mentions for the week. What's yours?
Well, you know what? Actually, before we do that, because we're talking about tournaments and watching tournaments, I'm going to throw in my bogey, which was the Andalusia Masters at Valderrama. I don't know if you're familiar much with Valderrama, but, you know, this golf course is super narrow. So narrow now that it's almost unplayable. The best golfers in the world, basically, if you look at the average width of where they spray the golf ball, they're not going to hit many fairways here. So Matt Fitzpatrick wins it at 6 under par. We got John Rahm, number one golfer in the world, shooting 78, 74, and basically sounding like you that he's going to just throw his clubs away for a while or whatever. Wasn't a lot of fun to watch pitch outs. It really isn't. I get it. It's, you know, this elevated golf course, you know, really revered for events and things holding over the years, but not that fun as far as watching a tour event, seeing, you know, like 14 players are able to break par just because, again, there are a lot of pitch outs in these cork trees and stuff. So big bogey for me for a week. And honorable mention, you know, we talked already, Rory getting that 20th win. You know, that was cool for him. So that's a birdie seeing him do that. But honorable mention, bogey, that trophy, the CJ Cup trophy, as I said on my Twitter, good reminder here for homeowners to change your furnace filter, because that's what this trophy looked like. You know, we've talked about bad trophies before, whether it's the Bermuda that's Championship pretty funny. Or whatever.
I didn't see that tweet. Yeah. That's good. That's like, really funny.
Yeah. Just, I looked at it right away. I'm like, what the hell is that that he's holding up? And the first thing that flashed in my brain was, furnace filter, you're supposed to change it this time of year, so that's a bad thing, really.
Yeah, or like an old Marshall amplifier speaker, the front of it.
Exactly.
They took the Marshall off and threw CJ. That's pretty funny, Scott. That's good. That got me. I don't know how I transitioned to my honorable mention. My honorable mention goes to Casey Martin. People will be familiar with Casey Martin for playing in the U.S. Open a few years back in a cart. He also, you know, played about 10 years out on the Korn Ferry Tour, and he needed a cart for this birth defect that he had in his right leg. And I'm not going to try to say it because I don't know how to. A few years back, Casey, so he's born with this, but a few years back, Casey actually broke his leg stepping off a curb. Like, that's how sensitive this guy's leg was. And basically at that point, he knew it was the beginning of the end for that leg. Casey last week went under successful surgery to actually amputate his right leg. And they believe they've got enough there that allow for him to have a prosthetic, go on to keep coaching at Oregon University. My understanding, maybe you've crossed paths with Casey, just an absolute great guy. I think he fought a great battle against the USGA trying to get that cart for the right reasons. And I remember it being just another horrible misjudgment by the USGA to even try to fight that in the first place. Almost swore there. I was so annoyed by it. And it's just nice to see it. Like, that happened. He fought it and everyone cheered for him for it. Unfortunate how it's an unfortunate story. I have a score for it. So I'm giving a birdie. I'm going to give an eagle for his recovery and him getting back to normal. But have you and Casey ever crossed paths at all?
Just saw him at a couple of events. And I know Jeff Quinney I've met a few times, who's taking his place right now, who's his assistant coach. And you know, as you said, there's not anybody who's got a bad word for Casey. Dynamic coach, fantastic player for what he had to go through. And the fact that, you know, he got to the level that he did is unfortunate that, you know, he ends up in this situation. But thankfully, as you said, it sounds like he'll be okay. He's got a long road ahead as far as some recovery and getting back that way. But can't wish him anything but good luck.
I agree. We got a pretty big guest this week.
Yeah, he's caddy okay. on the PGA he's okay. Tour
picked yeah. up a recent win. We have Billy Spencer, the caddy for Sungjae Im this week, Canadian from Aurora, Ontario. Comes on and going to tell us some good stories about caddying out on the PGA Tour, picking up that win recently in Las Vegas. Let's talk to Billy, see what he's up to, chat a little golf and chat maybe some Leafs. What do you say, Scotty?
Sounds good.
All right, folks, we'd like to welcome in recent winning caddy with Sungjae Im from Aurora, Ontario, Billy Spencer. How are you today?
Good, guys. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, man. It's nice to have another Canadian on the pod. It's been a while, especially Canadian caddies. They're usually the best to have on the pod. Let's talk about the recent win. Is this your first win as a caddy? Well, last time you won? Like, how are you feeling after that big week?
It was a good week. It's not my first win. It's my, my second win on tour, fourth, if you count some, silly season things. And then I won on the web and a few Canadian tour events. So maybe seven or eight total. But the, obviously winning on the big tour those are the wins that you want. So that's a pretty good accomplishment for my player.
What did that night look like for you afterwards? You know, did you get up to anything? I feel like I don't know Sungjae. We've crossed paths a couple times out on a range or so, but not the most social guy at that point. He was young in his career. What happened afterwards? Walk us through the post game celebrations.
Honestly, there wasn't much. He did his media. His trainer and I, Andrew Cummings, packed up his locker. And then actually, that was the Sunday nighter, the Bills Chiefs, which was pretty important for me. And then my buddies that I do my hockey pool with, that was our draft night too. So I had a couple other things on the go. So I got the flag off the green on 18, packed his bag, and I was down the road to the house to watch the game and do my draft.
Now that was the end for a big run for you guys. You guys have been out there for a lot of weeks. Were you guys starting to lose some gas a little bit, or was it okay as far as that big long stretch of play?
No, it wasn't bad. You know, we did six in a row, which is a lot. That was the Olympics through the Tour Championship, and then we were off for almost 3 weeks, and then came back and did Jackson, Vegas, and the CJ Cup. So it wasn't bad, but I mean, still 9 out of 12 weeks is a pretty good stretch. But anytime you can get 2 or 3 weeks off, that's pretty good recharge, moving forward.
Which is pretty rare. Like, everyone knows about Sungjae's schedule, right? Probably one of the, most played events on the PGA Tour. Obviously, he slowed down a little bit. He owns a house now. They talk about that. But I've caddied in a group with a former caddy of his, and he talked about how hard of a worker this guy is. Why don't you walk us through, like, a regular work week with Sungjae? Because I feel like it's unlike most other guys out there.
He's not afraid to hit some balls, but it's funny, the player that I worked for just before Sungjae spends way more time at the golf course. I spent more time at the golf course with my old boss than I ever have with Sungjae. Now, we haven't played as many tournaments, and Sungjae plays every day, obviously Saturdays and Sundays. My other player wasn't as lucky to have played as many weekends. So that makes the week longer, obviously, but that's a good thing. Typical Monday's a day off, travel day if he wants, walk the golf course. And then Tuesday, the new feature on the PGA Tour with 9-hole Wednesday pro-ams is nice. So that allows us to only have to play the 9 that we're not playing on Wednesday. We'll do that Tuesday and practice. Wednesday will be the other 9 and some practice, and then into the golf Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. And, as we play more in a row, there's less practice after rounds. When we were through the Tour Championship week 4, 5, 6 in a row, it was 18 holes and done. If we had 3 weeks off, or when we had the 3 weeks off and came back with Jackson and Vegas, we did some practice after the round, but it's not crazy. It's a lot of events, but the days are not, over the top for sure.
So obviously you got to go to the Olympics with Sungjae. How was that for you? A Canadian, obviously, on a non-Canadian bag, but again, I assume it's your first Olympic experience.
Yeah, that was my first Olympic experience. It was pretty cool. I would never pass up that opportunity. And I've said that to some of the other guys, some players and caddies who said no, who passed up the opportunity, whether it was for Rio 4 years ago, or 5 years ago, or Japan, but it was wild. It was tough. We stayed in a resort about 35, 40 minutes from the course. And we were confined to the resort, really the room, our room in the resort and a food area and the golf course. Those were really the only three places that we could go. But the Olympic experience was one of, a once in a lifetime opportunity for sure.
And obviously, going into that week, Sungjae's story was a big story, needing a medal to avoid military service. Did you feel like an added pressure? Do you think he felt an added pressure knowing how big that week was for him?
Oh, yeah, for sure. For him. I mean, that's the funny answer when people say, how were the Olympics? I say it was a great experience. And his answer is, yeah, it was okay. Because of the added pressure. I'm not the one having to go to the Army if I didn't get a medal, So to me, obviously, I felt the pressure for him. But, it was like any – you don't want to say it was like any other tournament. But at the end of the day, it was still 4 rounds, lowest score wins, and let's, do the same thing. I mean, maybe more of a birdie contest. There's no cut to be made. And, the lowest score wins again. But, I know he was feeling it. I know he was under some pressure for sure. So
Yeah, we were rooting for all of you as well. For that to happen, unfortunate, didn't get it done. And I am curious from your perspective, as you know, being a professional caddy, job security alone isn't something that's written into the description anywhere. And then you throw in the fact that at some point Sanjay has to go and do this military service. Like, where does your mind go with all of that? I know for you, it's like, I got to go week by week anyway, but you know, throwing that into the mix, is that something that comes up in your head?
No, not really. I mean, I don't know the specifics, but it's not like he has to go next summer, and enlist. I think he's got till he's in his 30s. I think he's 23. So he's got 8 more years or 2 more Olympics, as they would say. And then there's other ways to buy some time. You can, I don't know what he decides to do as far as, you know, in America with a work visa or a green card, but that can buy you time too. So you can kick the can down the road, sort of say, for a while. But yeah, ultimately, hopefully by the time he enlists in 10 or 12 years, I'm not doing this anymore.
So. Good point. Yeah, I mean, you mentioned his age there at 23. I mean, obviously we get to see him a lot. He doesn't seem like the usual 23-year-old, but in your sense, I mean, being a veteran that's out there and really you've caddied almost as long as he's alive, in what parts of his game do you think he is younger than 23? And what parts of his game do you think he's older than 23?
Everything on the golf course is over 23. He plays like a veteran. He thinks like a professional or like a seasoned professional. He prepares like a seasoned professional. I would say the only thing under 23 could be, and he's obviously with 3 weeks off starting yesterday, his schedule maybe. But he's starting to understand things like rest is important and being fresh is important, to come off. We didn't have we finished second in our second last week, and then we didn't have our best at the Tour Championship, but 3 weeks off and came back in Jackson, kind of knocked the rust off that 1 week and then won the next week and then finished ninth last week. So I think that's a sign for him to see that, hey, maybe a little bit of rest isn't that bad and not having to play every week. And obviously he's earned it too now, winning early in the season sets himself up. He can play, not that he couldn't play what he wanted to already, but now he can kind of put his blocks of weeks together of the events that he wants to be a part of and go from there.
Yeah. And this Vegas run was big for him, not only getting the win, but, CJ is a big sponsor, involved with him as well. That put some a little extra pressure on it, because I'm sure he had some extra corporate events and things he had to do this past week. So, that makes for two very busy Las Vegas weeks.
Yeah. No, with CJ he has a pretty good relationship with those people. So yeah, he had some extra stuff to do. Obviously coming off a win, you're already going to have some added media attention, and then throw in the fact that, his main sponsor is the host of the, the following week, that stretched him pretty thin, but obviously, he found a way to kind of battle through it and finish the way he did, shot 8 on Sunday, birdied 17 and 18. The finish in the top 10 was, I think he was pretty proud of the way that he kind of hung in there and kind of battled through it.
Yeah, it definitely was quite the showing. Now, you made a joke that in 10 to 12 years, you hope not to be doing this, as you've been a caddy for, since the early 2000s, potentially. You're talking about his schedule being almost that under 23. At your age with kids and everything, picking up one of the busier schedules on the PGA Tour, how has that adjustment been for you?
It's not bad. It's not bad. I live in Dallas now. It's an easy place to travel out of. I can get to every city we play in, including international events, straight. So the travel's not too much of a burden. And I mean, really, he's not going to play more than 33 or 34 tournaments, which still gives me, 20 weeks off, 18, 17, 18, 19 weeks off. That's pretty good. That's 4.5 months of holidays. So that's, I know I'm gone for 5 and 6 in a row, but then I'm home for 3 and 4 in a row with nothing to do but watch, practices and games when I'm at home. So it's fine. I've done it for a long time. 30 odd weeks a year is kind of what I'm used to. So, it shouldn't be too much of an adjustment, really.
Yeah. I think for a lot of people, for you, you've been doing it since, as we mentioned, like 2000, right? This is the life you live. This is the life you chose. I think a lot of people are going from a different life where they're home 52 weeks of the year and they're trying to imagine themselves out for, you know, 35 weeks of the year. I remember trying to do 2 weeks and being like, get me home immediately.
Yeah, no, it takes some getting used to it. It's kind of like anything. You get into a bit of a groove. You know, obviously you don't want to leave. If you're at home and you're enjoying yourself and you have to go away, you don't want to go away. But I think, you know, kind of once you get to the airport or get on the plane, get to the room, settle in. We rented a house in Vegas for 2 weeks this time. So, you know, three other caddies and myself. So, you know, you make a run to Costco, get all the TV and internet set up. And then it's just, it's home for 2 weeks. And you get used to it. You get into a bit of a rhythm and a groove and off you go.
For sure. Let's talk about how you got into this. Cause every time we get questions, we have caddies on the podcast. It's like, how do I get into caddying? So why don't you give us your origin story? How did you get into caddying? What was your first experience like out on the PGA Tour?
I worked at Beacon Hall. I grew up in Aurora. I worked at Beacon Hall in the bag room, a little bit in the shop. They had a caddy program. Really one of the only ones in the city. Think maybe Hamilton had a little bit of a program and maybe the Nash, but that was it. So did some stuff with some members. This is back in the mid 90s. There was a Canadian Tour event at Diamondback, which is where I kind of played my golf. They needed caddies. They called me up, or they called the club, they called Beacon, and we sent a bunch of guys over. They needed more. So I volunteered, you know, I said I would do it, took a couple of days off from Beacon, went over and caddied and got Jason Bone as my pro and kind of hit it off, similar age, you know, worked the week. I think I went the next week with him too, to Hamilton, to Heron Point, maybe. Yep. Ancaster.
Yeah. Timex Masters.
Yeah. Yeah. And did that. And I had a lot of fun. And then, the next year rolled around and, you know, did it again for him. I think we might've played, where did we play? Maybe Diamondback again and maybe Niagara Falls. And I think we might have won Niagara Falls or came close. And it just kind of snowballed from there. Every time he'd come to Toronto or in the area. And then there was a summer where I went out west to work for him in Victoria, Vancouver, all through Calgary, Winnipeg, Thunder Bay.
Were you on the bag for him for the 58 in Sarnia?
Yeah.
Nice. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. So, He kind of stopped playing for a little bit before that, or no, it may have been after the 58. He quit playing for a bit. I worked for Hank Keeney, and that was kind of my first taste on tour. Hank had some starts as an amateur champion. And then Bone, I got a real job. And that summer would have been 2002. It was the SARS nonsense, the same as kind of the COVID. I think it was 2002 or 2003. And mm-hmm. Bone got into, I think back then the Nike Tour, maybe Nationwide, at Diamondback, the field went deep. Guys didn't want to travel. Anyways, I worked the week. We lost in a playoff. Actually blew a 3-shot lead with 3 to go. But that got him enough money to get into the next week, which was, I think it was Hershey, Pennsylvania, top 10 there, which got him his card. 2 weeks later, we won in Chattanooga, and that got him on tour.
Crazy.
And then that was summer of 2003, and I've been on tour ever since.
What about the opposite? I what was the first time being fired like? Do you have a good story, a good firing story?
I've only been fired one time. I fired some players, but I've only been fired one time.
All right.
It was Bone that fired me, and I had had enough anyways. And he was like, you know what? I think this is it. And I was like, perfect.
Yeah. All right, give us a story of the opposite though, the firing on your end. You don't have to name names. I know it never is good for caddies, but maybe you're like, hey, screw it, I will.
Yeah, I mean, it's a tough call to make. You kind of, I mean, I've always enjoyed the guys that I've worked for. You know, I've enjoyed our time, and some guys were better players than other guys. But you know, they get their feelings hurt if they think what you're doing is a lateral move. They'll get their feelings hurt. If you're quitting them to work for a guy that they think is the same or they're better than, you know, they get a little pissed and they get over it after some time. It's a kind of a tough call to make. But obviously, you know, I had to quit a guy to go work for Sungjae. And I mean, as soon as I told him who it was, he was like, oh, wow, you know, good luck, you know? I mean,
he might be willing to do the job.
Yeah, like there wasn't anyone else. There's not another guy on tour that wouldn't have probably made the same move. So, yeah, I mean, it's a tough call to make, but it's business. And I mean, ultimately, if the shoe was on the other foot, they'd do the same thing. If they felt like they could improve, then they would too. And it happens all the time. So, you know, you just try to keep it professional and cordial. And I mean, you know, you're going to get paired with them the next week or the next week. And you know that they're the first guy you're going to see when you show up to the next tournament.
Oh, yeah.
But, you know, as long as you're prepared for that and you do it the right way, then, you know, hopefully it all works out.
Scott and I have had like handfuls of experience doing it. Never, you know, the full year career of caddying. But we get a lot of questions around that. Like, how do I get out there doing it full time? What advice would you give those people that think, hey, I want to be a full-time caddy, and especially nowadays compared to back then? But also, like, what don't they know? Like, what is the thing, like, hey, when you get out here, this is the actual, what it's actually like out here. It's not all just sunshine and rainbows.
Yeah, no, it's a grind, man. I mean, I kind of remember back, you know, when I first started, and some of the older guys most of them now are good buddies of mine. You know, they would, you know, they'd say things about certain players or the tournament or the city. And to me, everything was awesome, you know, new cities and traveling. And now fast forward 20 years, it's like, it's a job. I mean, it's a job. You're going to, like anything, you're going to work with people that you don't enjoy being around. I mean, that's life. And that's whether it's in school or work. And you're going to have some conflict, whether you want it or not. And it's how you approach it. It's like any other job. I mean, it's different that you're on TV and you're traveling and you're around pro golfers and, you know, all that other stuff that goes with it. But at the end of the day, I mean, you're doing it to earn a living or make a living. And I mean, I would never tell anyone to not do it, but you know, if you enjoy being at home, it's probably not something that I would recommend.
How has this changed your relationship with golf? I mean, you know, obviously you had a great interest in golf early on, but, you know, how does it change what you think about the game, and do you play much?
Yeah, that's a good question. I don't play ever, hardly. I mean, I might play once a year, and I usually get bullied into playing with someone locally, like a charity tournament or something. When I go home, I'll play with my dad and some of the guys from the club, maybe a nine hole. I'll join them for men's night, but it's just like, I don't enjoy it. It's like work for me. So like, I like to get, you know, anything but golf, really. Like, I don't watch it on TV much, maybe a major if I'm not there, might tune in on a Sunday afternoon to see what's going on. But yeah, it's like work. And so when I'm off, I like to try to get away from it. I mean, if my son ever said, you know, let's go play, absolutely. I'd you know, I'd grab the clubs and dust them off and I'd go play, but that's about what it would take for me to go. So it takes a lot. I enjoy being inside on the couch when I'm off. So that's, to be outside for 5 hours that's a big ask for me.
Well, I was going to ask you, like, how does that make you feel knowing like what got you here in the first place is love of playing golf and being involved with golf. And now it's literally just that, it's my job. And when I'm not doing it, I have just zero interest in being around it. Like, does it make you feel almost sad? I don't want to put words in your mouth to be like, wow, this relationship is obviously I've changed. I'm older. Like it's completely different than what it originally was.
No, I mean, yeah, a little bit, but you know, I would, if I didn't caddy or if I stopped, I'd love to coach a golf team I'm not a professional by any means as far as instruction goes, but I would help out, you know, golf teams or kids that are trying to get to college or trying to make it as a pro. I would love to do that. It's just the actual playing part of it that I can't be bothered to do. But you know, my son's a baseball player, and a lot of the guys that he works with are former pros, and it's kind of the same thing. Some hockey guys that I skate with are, you know, former stars and stuff, and they don't, it's the same thing. They'd love to coach and help out, but they have no interest in getting back on the ice and playing themselves. So the baseball guys, you know, love to help and give their advice and, you know, what it took for them to get to the next level, but you know, you couldn't get them to go out to a slow pitch game on Thursday night. Like it's kind of like that, you know, that giving back and helping out, I'm more than happy to do and would love to do it. But the actual like teeing it up and having to go find it myself, no, that's, yeah.
Is it bad I'm getting there myself without actually doing anything in the golf industry anymore? Just anytime I play, like, you know what, guys, ask me come caddy next time. I'll just four caddy for you guys. Yeah. I might enjoy it more.
It's, I mean, you go, it's a funny game, right? Like I was a decent player. And so, and I had certain expectations in it, and I practiced and shot scores that I wanted to shoot because I worked at it. Then I don't work at it. I can't shoot those scores. Then it doesn't become, and I don't have time to practice. Then it doesn't become any, you know, it doesn't become fun. You know, when you're shooting scores you don't want to shoot and hitting shots that just drive you crazy. It's just like, you know what? I'd rather just not. I ride around in the cart all day. That's fun. I'd love to ride around the cart and shoot numbers and, you know, do whatever. But yeah, having to tee it up myself and go find it. No, thanks.
Well, you're living in Dallas now, but you're sitting in front of us wearing a Toronto Blue Jays hat. How much of a connection do you still have with your hometown? Obviously, you know, you haven't been able to get back or near here for the RBC Canadian Open the last couple of years, but how often do you get back and how much do you pay attention to what's going on in Toronto?
Yeah, no, I get back quite a bit. That COVID, the whole COVID thing put a little bit of a wrench in it, but I found enough ways to get in. I made enough trips up there. I'll follow everybody. Yeah. I got some good buddies that work for the Jays. So actually we were lucky enough. They were playing their regular season games in Dunedin when we were there for, the Innisbrook tournament. So we saw them play, I think they had a 5 or 6 game homestand. We saw them play 2 or 3 against the Braves and 2 or 3, I think 5 or 6 total games and against the Nats. So, you know, we saw that and, watch the Leafs, buy the package. We got all the say. So yeah, I follow. I got a pretty good idea what's going on with both those teams. So, I mean, you know, we'll see how it all works out in the end. Maybe the Jays are on the right track. Who knows? But yeah, no, I always follow the Stars. I don't mind the Stars. I'll watch the Stars, the Rangers. I don't go to the ballpark unless it's the Jays in town. And the Cowboys, no interest.
Is there anything cooler though than Dunedin, that little town? And I cannot imagine what that little town is like with a regular season game happening, because it's just a cool experience for spring baseball, and then you throw in a regular season game, you're parked on some guy's lawn that's charging you, you know, 6-pack to park on his front yard or whatever. Like, just a little cool town. Like, what was that experience like for a regular season game?
No, it was great. I mean, we every year, that Innisbrook tournament times up with spring training. So every year for as long as I can remember, my buddy Kevin, who works for the Jays, him and his son, they hook us up with tickets and we get them some golf stuff. They get out to Innisbrook, we get down to Dunedin. So, you know, but you get there and you watch 2 innings of the starters, and then these guys with the high numbers get in there and you just don't know, you know, who they are, and you never see them again. But to roll in this year for, you know, 6 days in a row to watch them play meaningful games, we saw, Scherzer pitch for the Nats. We saw Soto. The Braves were there. I can't remember one of their good starters, Freeman, Acuna. I mean, it was legit. We're sitting 2 rows from the on-deck circle, and it was cool. It was a really cool experience to watch the major leaguers play, you know, in that ballpark and hitting home runs off the school in left field. And it was neat though. It was the town embraced it. We're kind of lucky. We don't have to park on someone's lawn. We kind of know a guy that lets us in the park beside the stadium. So that all that parking nonsense, we don't have to worry about. But yeah, it was cool. It was a cool place to watch a game for sure.
And obviously you're Leafs, big Leafs fan. What are your thoughts on the team this year? And Stefan will commiserate with you because he's a huge Leafs fan too.
I was at the game against Ottawa recently. That was cool to be back in a building in Canada. I hadn't obviously done that in 2 years. And every time I go to that building, the Leafs somehow find a way to lose just to an awful hockey team with the Ottawa Senators. But what are your thoughts on the team this year?
I don't think they're as good talent-wise as they were last year, but I kind of think they might be able to figure out a way to play better as a team, if that makes any sense. I think if they look around and they don't see Freddie and Net, and they don't see Hyman and some of these, you know, Bogosian and some of these guys that did, you know, did a good job and kind of chipped in at least Hyman offensively and stuff, I think that they look around and they see Bunting and Richie and these guys that they might, maybe that makes them tighten it up a little bit. Maybe that helps them win a 2-1 game in the playoffs or a 3-2 game instead of trying to win 7-6. And I saw a few, you know, the last couple of games, even last night, you know, it felt like they were doing the right things, I guess, instead of trying to hot dog it around and make an extra pass. And I mean, who knows? I'm so used to them letting me down in April. They're going to have to do something pretty epic for me to not think that they'll screw it up at some point.
Well, they did that that Amazon All or Nothing or whatever series where they followed them around last year. And for some reason, they decided to release it after all the pain, like 6 months later. Just bring it all back up. I'm curious. You've been around the PGA Tour for a long time, and there's talks that apparently they are looking to do this, where they're going to follow some guys around for the season. If you were the producer and you had to choose a few guys to follow around for the season, who would you choose for the PGA Tour for that all or nothing behind the scenes look at their life throughout a whole PGA Tour season?
I'd follow the caddies, man.
Well, obviously, but then it would be rated R and wouldn't get picked up by anybody.
The players are pretty late. No, I mean, the first one that comes to mind, I would follow Harold Varner. Oh, he's a huge personality. He's an awesome dude. He's not afraid to have some fun. He tells it like it is. He's not afraid. He's not afraid to speak his mind. And, you know, I think you get the camera in front of some of those guys, they're going to be afraid to speak their mind. It's going to come off pretty vanilla. But I think Harold would keep it pretty entertaining. That would be the number one guy that I would follow.
All right. And you got to throw a caddy under the bus. Who are you following? If you only get to pick one caddy, same thing. Who are you sending the camera crew with?
One of the younger guys. One of the younger guys that's still just kind of living the dream and living vacation and hitting every club and watching every game and going to the fights every night. Yeah. I mean, there's about 10 or 15 of them. So one of those guys, none of the older guys that we were in bed last week in Vegas. I mean, it was lights out at the house by 8:30 every night. So we're not going to set the world on fire anymore for sure.
The older guys are who I want to be around at those. So at the Canadian Open a few years ago, I just got stuck in a tent near a couple of the older guys, and they're the guys with the stories. And there's a bunch of photos of all like guys in the 60s, and they're telling stories of this guy walking down this fairway and how they like, those are the guys you want to be around for those stories. They'll never tell the stories on a podcast like this, because, you know, it's the old school, you know, motto of just, you know, shutting up. But you get in those caddy rooms and there's nothing better than a rain delay with a bunch of old school caddies.
Yeah. No, there's some good stories for sure. I mean, that would be the same as getting in a house. Like, we rent a lot of houses nowadays. Hotels are okay. But get rent the house with three or four bedrooms and some couches, and we can cook. That kind of, you know, splits up the traveling nonsense. You can get some pretty good conversations going, you know, especially as the guys make their way back into the house on Thursday or Friday after playing, and you're not going to believe what he said here, and you're not going to believe the shot we hit here. It's pretty entertaining. I mean, you get some old stories that come back from the past of other guys that we've worked for, but even just the current stuff's pretty fun to just kind of sit there and, you know, hear that, you know, what did you hit on 16? You know, we hit 7-iron. I can't believe where it ended up. And they're like, we hit 7-2. And then you're like, well, good. At least I'm not an idiot for hitting 7. I'm like, you had said you guys hit 9 or something. So yeah, those are fun stories and stuff, but it's tough. That'll be a tough egg to crack to get us to do it, you know, to do it on the camera or over the phone.
All right, one last thing for you from me, but I think you have some history at St. George's. What's it going to mean for you to get back next year and be able to caddy there?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, no, it'd be great fun. I've played it a bunch, caddied there whenever we had the Open there last, maybe, was it 10? Maybe
10, yeah. Carl Pedersen won, yeah.
Yeah, so, and I was looking for it. It's too bad. I mean, it's kind of a joke that we haven't been able to play up there, at least last year. I understand 2 years ago. But all the nonsense last year for us to not be able to play up there is pretty disappointing. So hopefully they got their act together. I know it's not the Golf Canada guys, but hopefully the rest of the suits have their act together and let it be normal. Because, I mean, honestly, it's been pretty normal down here for a while playing golf. I mean, the fans are limited and the suites and stuff and some of the distancing and all that stuff is fine. But, you know, the community and the city deserves, you know, it does. If, you know, if the Raps and the Jays and the Leafs and everybody can play in a full barn, then we should be able to at least, you know, tee it up with spectators and suites and, you know, let people get their golf, you know. I mean, it should be a pretty good run. I mean, St. George's and then maybe Oakdale next year and then either Hamilton or back to St. George. I know Oakdale, St. George's, Hamilton are all kind of.
Yeah, it's Oakdale, then Hamilton, and then they haven't named 25 yet, which will be coming. So
maybe back to the Abbey.
Maybe we'll see. There might be another one in there.
I'd rather them cancel it than go back to the Abbey.
I like the Abbey. I enjoy the Abbey. I really do. I think it's for a golf tournament and for fans, it's awesome. I mean, I don't know who does it. I mean, the players, it's average as far as the year go. We play way worse golf courses though. We play way worse golf courses. So I enjoy the Abbey. To each his own.
I love it. All right, Billy, we'll see you there next year. We'll make sure to catch up with you then, chat a little bit more at that point. Maybe I know Scotty will be inside the ropes next year. I'll be searching for a bag starting today, and hopefully we can get in to one of those houses with you and get in on all those off-the-record conversations next year. We really, really appreciate you coming on Tee Talk. Go Leafs, go, and we'll chat soon.
You got it, guys. Thanks for having me.
Thank you, Billy, for that interview. We're looking forward to catching up with him at the RBC Canadian Open. It's crazy to think that we're talking 3 years, 2 years, 2 years. No, yeah, 3 years.
It'll be almost. Three by the time it comes around. 2019, Hamilton. So by the time we are at St. George's, it'll have been 3 years.
That is crazy. It feels like yesterday, too. It really does. And Hamilton's looking awesome too. I know I talked about that last week, but look forward to getting back there and look forward to getting to St. George's. It's going to be awesome. Just a really cool feeling being around fans. I know golf fans, golfers love coming to Canada. Our fans are awesome. Like we're loud, but you know, we're not the waste management. So it should be a good time.
Yeah. And it'll be good too. Just the fact the dynamic there, you know, I attended there in 2010 that Billy talked about. That was a great tournament. You know, the city really came out and supported the event, and it was great that the many golf fans in Toronto were sort of rewarded to have that, you know, a great golf course, a great private golf course, one of the best ones in the country, hosting that event. And, you know, doesn't matter what the players do. It's a great walk. It's a great environment. There's some fantastic spots for spectators in there, and you know, I think it'll be very, very embraced just because it is not only a good golf course, but 3 years and people are going to be itching to get those tickets.
Oh yeah, we're at 8 months to talk about it, so look forward to it. Do we have anything to talk about this week though? No, the Zozo's on. Limited field. Where are we? Japan, China. Yeah. Where are we this week?
We're in Japan. We're over in Chiba, Japan. So, you know, it's obviously returned back to Japan. They held it in California last year. 78 player field. We got a few headliners in there. Your Xander and Colin Morikawa, Hideki, Will Zalatoris. Got a couple Canadians in there, Sloan and Mackenzie Hughes. But it's not going to garner a lot of eyeballs. This is certainly not the one that Tiger won a couple years ago.
How did Roger Sloan get into a 78 player event?
Well, there you go. That you got to remember, this is how far they went down,
I guess,
to get the field. So you go dig through the field and look through the player list, and a lot of people weren't in the mood to go to Japan, apparently.
I mean, would you? Like, it's pretty far right now with the. Yeah, there's Sloan's, for the record, like we've never had Sloan on here, but.
Oh, good dude.
He's been playing great.
Yeah.
Right. But there's some like James Hahn is in this event.
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
Keep looking, keep digging through. It looks like an opposite field event as opposed to.
It really does.
Yeah.
There's
no disrespect to the, you know, the players that have obviously gone there, but you know, if you look how deep they had to go to get players there, I mean, it's coming on the tail end of obviously the kickstart to the season, you know, that run in Vegas. Some other players are just kind of, you know, they want to basically start their vacations more than anything.
Yeah, we're into the weird run here where things, you know, if I've been watching golf lately. I don't know what tournaments are gonna like. What's the next one that we should really be looking forward to? That's like the must see coming up.
Tigers tournament, maybe the challenge.
Yeah, but is that for potential sighting of Tiger or like
just for the quality of the players more than anything? But I think we're deep into football season. Obviously, a lot of players wanted to sit on their couch and see their family. They know they're going to be busy as soon as January hits. So you know, this time that's happening right now is going to go fast. You got to remember too, players need time to test new equipment, check out new sponsor deals.
That's what I'm interested in. Yeah. Let's get these new sponsor deals. Who's moving where? You got any insight?
Not a lot happening right now. So.
Nothing? Okay. No, you wouldn't tell anyway. You're the worst.
Sorry.
All right, let's just hit the mailbag then. Yeah. We got nothing. We're just going to speculate. Tiger's going to Callaway. You heard it here first. He's not going. All right, let's hit the mailbag, Scott. We got any questions this week, or we're just ending the episode here?
No, we got a few. This one we sort of touched on a little bit. Somebody said, is Ricky Fowler going to be back on top by the end of the year? End of the year, I think they're talking about 2022. I don't think they're actually talking about the calendar year at this point. But, I talked about a par earlier. Do you think Ricky's going to accelerate, or do you think he's just going to stay stalled?
I guess the question, though, is he getting a win, right?
True. That would be back on the top, sure.
If you're talking about on top, because, like, he's not going to be the top player in the world. He's not going to, what's on top for Ricky? On top for Ricky was him picking up, say, a win every other year.
Yeah, or being in the top 10 in the world, not being 128th or whatever he was before last week.
So here's the thing. I'm actually going to go out on a limb and say Ricky picks up a win this year in 2021. Why am I saying that?
Where?
Just because he wins every other year. And that's literally my only reason. So the last time he won was the 2019 Waste Management Phoenix Open. Prior to that was the 2017 Honda Classic. Prior to that was the 2015 Deutsche Bank Championship plus the Players. So why not? Let's go this week. Let's go this week, Ricky. Pick up the dub.
Well,
yeah, so,
I mean,
either way, what
he's hot. He's
yeah,
hot.
Exactly.
So, I mean, if he's going to have momentum, maybe we'd have it right now. But, if he doesn't win this week, I don't see a lot happening on the schedule that, really says, hey, Ricky's going to win. I could see him maybe early in the year.
You don't see like the Houston Open for him, the RSM Classic, like Robert Streb won, Brian Gay won the Bermuda Championship. Obviously, Ricky's not going to Bermuda.
Well, that's the thing. We just don't know what his schedule is going to look like. I mean, is he going to press? He's going to feel that he has got some momentum and that he's going to play a little bit more. I mean, maybe he will. Maybe he feels that he needs to and to get out there. So, yeah, I mean, there's certainly a possibility. But it's still, you're still talking about a limited number of events, it Bermuda, Mayakoba, or Houston. But, this week, probably one of his best chances. So what you're saying is basically, one out of those four events, he's going to win this year in the calendar year.
Yeah, it's a pretty stupid statement. I'll agree with that. but I do think he actually will pick up a win at some point. Maybe it's a perspective win, and we get the interview with Amanda Balionis afterwards.
He's crying.
Has been a new father. Has Ricky ever cried?
Oh, I'm sure he has.
I mean, after an interview, like in an interview after a golf tournament.
I don't track it that closely.
You don't have a Ricky crying track?
I have not. I got to check see if there's an app in the Apple store there for that.
But like, I just don't see him as a crier. So I guess, he cried at the when he blew the Waste Management. Remember in the press conference, when he blew it, he hits it over the water.
He dunked in the water. Yeah.
On 17, drove it over the water and then lost in the playoff to Hideki. There we go. I was going to say a person.
A person. Hideki. Generally, yeah. That's what happens. You do lose to another person.
So, all right. Maybe Ricky could cry. Yeah, maybe you're onto something. All right. Now I'm really believing. I'm going to bet Ricky every week on the rest of the year until he picks a win. So my answer is yes. What is your answer?
I say he's going to win something in the next 6 months, but I don't know if he'll win by the end of this year.
Yeah. I mean, realistically, I'm answering till the end of 22. I'm just throwing. Like
I guess, it'll be something to watch for sure.
Yeah. All right.
Yeah.
Good question. All right. I like it.
We'll move on. I see PXG has really dropped their pricing on some products. Are they worth trying? How much experience do you have with PXG products?
I've hit one iron. It was my friend's. I hit a 7-iron, dropped a ball on a tee block and hit it into a marsh for fun. So that's it. It actually felt nice.
Yeah.
I've never actually had much testing. I find, like, I mean, obviously, I think they're worth trying. Like, why not? Right.
Yeah,
like,
I think the driver is just over $300. So, yeah. I mean, that's super cheap. One of the drivers.
They're all in the same mix. Like, I've seen them. They sound like I actually hit one of the older drivers and they sound good. I think the pricing's at a good point. For me, there's just a little too busy. Like, it looks like I need, like, there's too many. Like, does it come with an Allen key for the back of them?
Yes,
like,
I think so.
Oh, okay.
There's a lot going on.
Yeah, like, there's just a lot going on. Yeah. I think this 0311 line, even with all the Allen keys, does look nice. But
they look very, we'll call it ping-like in their profile. And that's obviously natural. There's a number of gentlemen that used to work for Ping that now, you know, work for PXG, and won't have to name them all, but, you know, look very similar as far as styling in that way, obviously different internals, all sorts of different things. It's more aesthetic more than anything, but yeah, worth trying. Certainly. I mean, to think about it, you know, if you're going to go out there and spend $700 for a driver, if there's an option to hit something or try something that's just over $300 that they've cut down the pricing in some of these, why wouldn't you give it a whirl?
Now I'm curious, and you would be the guy to do it. Maybe you can, from a trademark standpoint, do they have more trademarks out on for other clubs that you can't buy? Like, I'm wondering if they're kind of more of the old school, you know, hey, these are the drivers we're selling you retail, but this is what we actually got out on tour right now. Have you seen anything along those lines?
Yeah. The thing is, they don't have that many out on tour, right? They have some paid staff, obviously, yeah. But you know, it's not like a lot of people that are free agents are putting PXG stuff in their bag. So, you know, they have a lot of iterations. Certainly they had some trouble early on with their drivers trying to get the spin rates down. So certainly saw some, you know, iterations that were designed just for the tour. The products that they have sort of reduced in price now are some older models that they've had or have been in the line for quite some time. But I think that what they're trying to do, though, is trying to fill a couple price voids. And those are the voids that we talked about, you know, being in the market. So I guess if people have not tried PXG, I mean, here's what it comes down to. Can you get the product? Apparently you can. So if they have availability, can you get the product? Yeah, it's probably worth trying, because, you know, you might be waiting 5 or 6 months for a driver from some other manufacturer at this point.
Yeah, I mean, they've changed a little bit, right? Yeah. Like, there's
the aesthetics
teams,
have changed.
The team's a little different. They don't, like, when they first came out, they had a couple superstars. Not really the case anymore. I did a little bit, I remember, with Billy Horschel on, like, a while back, of like, hey, did his game drop off a cliff after, you know, he went to PXG? I think their performance is going to be there, right? They have all the technology. Yeah. Like, hey, Jason Kokrak, quite the resurgence, kind of popped up, finally picked up a couple wins, and he's been with them.
Oh, the Joel product's Damon. Good.
So, yeah. So, like, why not? Yeah, price is right. Product's good. I don't have a lot of experience. Yeah, why not?
There you go. That's the easy answer. All right, on to number three here. I won some tickets to the 150th Open in St. Andrews. Any travel tips for setting up my trip? I don't know if you saw, the lottery sort of came out yesterday. I saw all sorts of people either saying, I got tickets, or other ones that were going, I have tickets for sale.
Wow. I haven't heard. If I won, does that mean I didn't?
Were you in the lottery?
I was in the laundry.
Well, wow. you gotta remember, yeah. They have you gotta remember the tens of thousands of tickets. So the process might be just starting. It might not be instant that first day of finding out. So you probably would find out either way. That's for sure. But as far as tips are concerned, I have already talked to a couple of people that have won. One of them is selling their practice tickets already. Another is fortunate to have family nearby so they can stay there. The other has never been there before. And the first thing I said to them was, book your accommodations now. And
you missed the boat on booking your accommodations.
Yeah. Oh, no. And I said,
You're not staying in St. Andrews. You're not staying in Dundee. You're going to be lucky to get something in Edinburgh, and it's going to be expensive, because I can tell you right now,
in cheapest Airbnb in St. Andrews.
Oh, it's now like $3,000 or something for a night.
Yeah, you're looking at minimum $1,500, and this is like on the outskirts of town.
Yeah,
I'm trying to get like as close to the golf course.
I looked last night. I found two places that were literally like $3,000 a night. There was nothing in Dundee, which is about 20 minutes away. There were some accommodations still available in Edinburgh, but you know, I would say the biggest thing is that go for Edinburgh. Expect to take the train in. Take the train into Lucre's and then take your bus in from there. I can tell you that in 15, the same place that I had stayed just the year before that cost about £800 for a week was going for eight times that during that open that year. And that wasn't the 150th open. So the prices are definitely through the roof. So definitely dig into it right now. Expect to, you know, take some time to travel. Think about getting a ScotRail pass so that you can jump on and jump off a train, because driving in there would be a nightmare for sure.
Oh, absolutely horrible. I'm just looking at this one, that the one window of this one bedroom condo, you can just see some grass, so you can kind of see a golf course somewhere over there. Okay. One bed, one bath.
Yeah.
For the week, you're looking at just a smooth $78,000.
Wow.
And in a one bedroom, one bath.
Is somewhere in the description, does it say it's cozy or quaint?
Well, better, you know, it's definitely, I mean, you're staying in the United Kingdom. It's not going to be large.
I did have somebody ask me about that. They said, you know, I'm looking at places to stay. What we should be looking at or whatever. I said, if you see the words cozy or quaint, run away, because it's going to be really small over there.
Yeah. So that's the highest price I've found. Looks like you can stay. What town is this in? An entire bungalow and. It says near St. Andrews Coast. Does not look near. Looks drafty is how I would describe it.
I've stayed in a few drafty Scottish places for sure.
Like drafty. So this is going.
Oh my god!
This place is going for only $655 a night. So for the
deal.
For the week, you're spending $5,000. It looks like a grandmother had died in the chair in front of the TV. No. And like the recliner's still stuck. It's in Largoward, Scotland. Yeah. I think this is somebody's home that they're like, hey, I can make a little bit of money during this week, 'cause it's not that far. I don't know if I'd stay here. This looks like what I would imagine Scotland being like 20, 30 years ago.
Okay.
It's not good.
Yeah.
It's really not good.
Yeah. It's going to be a nightmare for some people. It's great that you got the tickets, but that is certainly only one component of the trip. You know, God love you that you're going to get there for that 150th open, but pray that you can find some place to stay. I don't know if they're going to do the camping. They did that a couple of years ago. They've done that a couple of opens, but you know, if that's an option in St. Andrews, and I'm not sure everybody's going to be doing that, but there's going to be a lot of people scrambling. That's for sure.
Yeah, a lot of good spots in Edinburgh. Edinburgh is a great town.
Yeah, it is a great city.
Oh,
yeah.
I'd get you a lot. Like, get back there. Like, nice condo right on the water. And like, if you're only going for a couple of days, do that. Go down.
Yep.
Crash in Edinburgh. Go up for a day. Go watch the golf. Come back. It's like, what was it, like an hour and a half, maybe a 2-hour train ride. And then like, you're barely in Edinburgh. Like, you're not around. I mean, it's kind of the only way you're gonna be able to do it unless you get a car and you basically drive to a bus stop at some point. But even then, it's gonna be chaos. Good luck. I wish. You know, I think Scott and I could probably get in there if we wanted to. We just don't know how we'd ever get into there.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, even through the PGA, let alone media, you know, you can get access. But again, that's only part of it. It's like any other big event. I mean, it's the travel, it's the accommodations, it's the driving in, driving out. However you're going to do that, that is always the trouble. So, yeah. So the clean thing just to say for people, if you're planning to go there, Edinburgh, book it now. Look into the rail pass. Don't plan on driving. Take that train up.
get something close to the Waverley Station, which is the main train station in Edinburgh, hop on there, zip up to Lukers, which is the closest train station to St. Andrews, and then they'll jet you in there by bus into town from there. And that's probably the easiest way to tackle it, at least for now, while there's still accommodations available in Edinburgh.
I love it. Jealous, but not at the same
yeah.
time.
Yeah. All right. We were talking about her earlier. Somebody said, how do you guys think Maud Amie LeBlanc will do on the LPGA Tour next year after earning her card again through the Symetra Tour?
Perspective. It's the perspective tour. I think it's 100%. You know, somebody retires and says, hey, I want this, and goes and gets it.
Yeah.
Watch out.
Yeah.
Right. I mean,
she had 9 top tens this year in 17 events.
Watch out. Right. Like, life could have been good. She did not need to go on the Smetch Tour. Could have found a job, could have worked, you know, made good money, not lost money on the Smetch Tour and grind in little towns they play out there. So, you know, watch out is how I would say. I mean, it's hard, though. It's still hard. You get out there, it's not like it's going to be easy for
her. No, not everybody. I mean, everybody else is in the same boat. I mean, they're all fighting for the same check. So it's not like they're going to lay down because Maud Amie LeBlanc came to town. So
yeah, watch out. Like, nobody knows who she is out there. Like, so, like, I mean, some, you know, do, but you know what I mean? It's not like she's Lydia Ko coming back from retirement. It's still somebody that, you know, still needs to earn their place out there. And then still Brooke Henderson's still going to be the face of it and of Canadian golf. But yeah, I'd watch out.
I would too. And I would think too as well, you know, she'll be a face to watch at the Ottawa Hunt when the CP Women's Open is there next year. She played there as an amateur, actually in probably one of the tallest groups I've ever seen play golf. She had just won the Quebec amateur and then got to play in that event. And she played with Sandra Gall and Michelle Wee in a round. So it was 3 6-footers playing in a round, which was really cool to watch. So I would expect good things from her. Like I said, 9 top tens this year on the Symetra Tour. And as you said, you know, she's got perspective now. She probably realized how fortunate she was to play the LPGA Tour in the first time. Maybe didn't do all the things that she wanted to do. Maybe regretted a few things. And then, you know, now she can put her full force into it for sure.
Speaking of Michelle Wee, I was watching the Food Network the other day on my lunch hour.
Nice transition.
And yeah, no, it's there, believe me.
All right.
And Michelle Wee was a guest judge on Beat Bobby Flay.
Come on.
It's just like,
that's
a
cool,
Bobby. Though. Yeah, Bobby Flay, like, plays, you know, does a cooking challenge against amateur cooks or, you know, cooks that aren't on the Food Network or whatever channel I was on. Michelle Wee was out there. It must have been on her, like, when she was retired and not working.
Yeah, she had a break or whatever, too. You know, when I mentioned the other week playing with Kevin Blue, who went to Stanford and, you know, worked at Stanford as well in the athletic department. And we actually talked about Michelle Wee when we're out on the golf course. And, you know, he said she was fantastic to the school and there was nothing that she wouldn't do for the school, for the program, for anything. So she was great to them and he had nothing but kind words for her, for sure. All right, last question here. If my new father-in-law asks for golf tips, is that a hand grenade I should avoid or should I help him out? Just an average golfer, but he is new to the game. I assume that person is saying they're an average golfer and the father-in-law is new to the game.
I say you get off your wallet, you go find a PGA Tour pro near him and you buy like a
PGA Tour pro. Wow.
Sorry, PGA. I'm done, man. I'm done. I can't do it. You're PGA a professional. Boy. Near them and it's a gift. Here you go. Yeah. Here's some lessons. Yeah. Here's a pro. They're gonna get you sorted out. There's no win situation. I mean, I don't know what your relationship is like with the father-in-law, but that's got to put you in the good books. He's new to the game. He's got the itch. Here you go. Like I'll spend a little money on that.
Yeah. I think that's a better way to do it because, you know, if things go badly with the, you know, the situation of you helping him out, maybe he has high expectations of you and things don't go well and you catch the blame for it. It's not worth it. So I think more hand grenade for sure. And I like your solution there. Get off the wallet. Invest in you know, something for him as a gift. I'm sure he'll certainly appreciate that, and you don't have to worry about any type of conflict happening as a result of it. You need to be in those good books and you need to stay in those good books, so there's no sense meddling in it for sure. All right,
I agree.
That's the mailbag for the week. Thanks everyone for sending in those questions. Keep them coming. We'll obviously put out the mailbag ask every week on our Instagram, Tea Talk Podcast, and out on social channels as well. So just keep them, keep sending them in, and don't hesitate too. As soon as you hear this podcast, if you've got a question, send it in right away. Just don't wait for us, and we'll take them, whatever you got, serious, funny, hypothetical, or ridiculous.
I usually come up with something ridiculous to ask, but I got nothing today. Scott, give me something to work on in my game over the next week. I'm playing this weekend. I need a little tip, something to work on. I haven't been doing much golf exercise. I haven't swung a club. I don't really have clubs to swing anyway. give me a good tip of the week, Scotty, to work on.
Yeah, I've got a tip of the week coming at you in a couple ways this week. I'll tell you a little bit about it, but we've also going to have the video up on our Instagram as well. Big thing this week, I see a lot of people with a very flat hip turn. So when we see a golf swing, we see a lot of people trying to make back swings where they're trying to swing around, and they keep their hips really, really level. And as a result of it, they don't have a lot of angle in their hips. They don't have a lot of tilt, and they don't use the ground properly, and they tend to hit a lot of thin shots. So what we want to see when someone's making a backswing is we want to see their lead hip, which would be their left hip for a right-handed golfer. We want to see that starting to get a little bit lower as you make your backswing. So you're going to see a little bit more flex in your left knee, and your right knee is going to straighten kind of a little bit. That gives a little bit of tilt to the pelvis. And what that does is that also gets the club on a little bit of a better plane. It helps you also put pressure into the ground so you can help use the ground to create more speed in your golf swing. If you swing just flat, as far as your hips just staying level and your shoulders staying level, you'll just kind of surf along the top of the ground. You won't really use it a lot. So as a result of it, you end up with some different issues for sure. So a little bit more left knee flex as you work your way back, keep them tilt in the pelvis. That's going to get the club working down as it should during the golf swing, encourage a more effective angle of attack, a little bit of better strike on the club face. Don't swing flat.
All right. I'll try that. I mean,
and have a look at the video if you need a better explanation.
Yeah, those are way better. I know for me, and more visual. So check out the video on our Instagram at Tea Talk Podcast. Scott's got a bunch of them. We got to get back using them. I think we've saturated ourselves. We need to find some energy, get back, really take over the Instagram account and get some more content in there. And, you know, I think one way to do that, we got to get a weekly Scott versus me quick round on the Instagram, post some shots, get up there, some chirps. We'll make it happen. But that's it for the week. Thank you for listening. Thank you, Billy Spencer, for coming on. We've been working on trying to get lined up with Billy and doing it on his off week, which is a rare thing, as you heard, for him with Sungjae. A little bit better now, but Sungjae still is one of the busiest guys out on tour. So thank you, Billy, for doing that. Scott, any final thoughts before we wrap things up?
Nope, all good. We'll see what the golf looks like from Japan, but otherwise,
will we?
I don't know if we're going to see much, but
Is it even going to be on?
Yeah, that's a good question. Actually, I'll have to have a look at that and see what the times. I mean, if it's anything like the Olympic experience, it's going to be on in the middle of the night, which is going to be a nightmare. So hopefully there's some replays, because that's about as much as I'm going to watch, probably.
For sure. All right. Well, we'll maybe watch some golf. We maybe won't. We're going to try to play. We maybe won't. We don't know. Either way, we'll break it all down next week. Thank you, everybody, for listening. We'll chat then.